So now we're going to talk about general principles of management of small bowel neuroendocrine tumors. And in the last 10 minutes, I have no new disclosures. So primary small bowel neuroendocrine tumors are the most common site of GI neuroendocrine tumors. And their incidence is about 12 per million, as we discussed. About 50% are multicentric. That means there's more than one tumor in the small bowel. Most are well differentiated, and they grow in an indolent fashion, but they often present late. And what I mean by that is with distant metastases. Now, the workup would involve a history and physical examination. The history, you're looking for flushing, diarrhea, wheezing, signs of right-sided heart failure. On physical examination, you may be looking for a liver that's below the costal margin, suggestive of multiple liver metastases. Some people have you can tell that they flush frequently with a plethoric face, and you may see signs of abdominal distension. The biochemical testing that we do for those at Iowa is we check serotonin, chromogranin, and pancreastatin levels in the serum, although chromogranin A are the only ones that are recommended by the NCCN. And then a 24-hour urine test for 5-hydroxyindoleacetic acid can also be useful. Now, some patients will have carcinoid syndrome. Carcinoid syndrome, it happens when the serotonin, the histamine, and other vasoactive amines bypass the liver metabolism. And so this happens with patients with liver metastases and sometimes those people with retroperitoneal lymph node involvement. And these patients will have flushing in 94% of cases, diarrhea in about 80% of cases. Right-sided heart disease is not quite as common as shown here. It's probably more like 10 or 20%, and about 20% will wheeze. Now, these symptoms in those patients with the syndrome can be brought out by the 5 E's, which are eating, epinephrine, emotion, ethanol, and exercise. So if you talk to a patient with carcinoid syndrome, you say, well, what if you have a glass of wine, do you flush? And the answer is pretty much yes in all those patients. So there are things that will bring that about. Now, the further workup of these patients might include a colonoscopy. You're going to see some of these lesions in the terminal ileum, but most of them will be missed. Imaging is going to find most of these, and the best overall test, as we mentioned, is a CT scan. MRI is really better to characterize liver lesions, but you'll lose a lot of the retroperitoneal lymphadenopathy. And the gallium DOTA PET scan is very good for determining that a lesion is indeed a neuroendocrine tumor and to determine the sites of distant metastases. Now, FDG PET is not so good for neuroendocrine tumors. Only high-grade lesions or higher-grade G2 lesions will show up on a PET scan. So do not get an FDG PET unless you're worried about a high-grade lesion. Now, the stage of diagnosis in the SEER database shows that 29% of patients have localized disease, 41% have regional, and 30% have distant disease. But in our practice, we see more like 85% with regional node involvement and 77% with liver involvement. And this has to do with our tertiary referral bias and the fact in the community a lot of patients will have earlier tumors resected for small bowel obstruction, whereas we'll see the patients with more advanced disease. This is a typical patient you might see who's had abdominal pain and you see a right lower quadrant mass. Again, this is not that commonly seen to see a mass on CT, but here you see some calcified mesenteric lymphadenopathy nearby. And in the pelvis, you can see a thickened loop of small bowel suggestive of mesenteric venous congestion. We would recommend exploration in this situation, which we usually do by a midline incision. If you're going to do a hepatic cytoreduction, that's a big incision. If it's just for exploration, you can do it with a smaller incision. And the key thing is to palpate the entire small bowel. The average length of small bowel in patients is about 5 to 600 centimeters, and it's very important to palpate the entire length. This just shows that patient that we showed the CT scan for, and you can see that these silk sutures represent different lesions that we found. There are 3 of them, and you can see that they're not really visible on the outside of the bowel. But when you palpate with your fingertips, you will feel them quite easily, even if they're just 1 or 2 millimeters in size. This patient had a larger lesion, though, and this was the obstructing lesion right here. This is a transserosal tumor that could also lead to future peritoneal metastases. And you can see the very thickened bowel that we saw in that pelvic CT scan. Now, this just shows the locations of tumors that we found in a group of patients who had a single tumor. And if you put the 500 centimeters of bowel here, you'll see that the vast majority are in the terminal ileum. We only had one patient have a tumor in the first 100 centimeters of the small intestine. Now, 55% of the patients had more than one tumor, though. And this just shows the distribution of tumors. This is the number of tumors. This person had 129 of them, and this shows the distribution of these tumors. So it's critically important to palpate the entire small bowel, or you're going to miss these lesions. These lesions generally start in the small bowel. They spread along the regional lymphatics to the regional lymph nodes. And what you need to do is to resect the regional lymph nodes up the subsegmental vessels. And this just shows a patient with an ileocolic lesion where you're going to resect up to the takeoff of the ileocolic artery. And sometimes nodes will go above that. And we would recommend in that situation just take the vessel at the origin and then dissect the nodes off separately. Now, sometimes people have a situation where there are a large number of nodes that surround the SMA and SMV, and this is a situation where it's very difficult to resect, and it could be very dangerous for the integrity of the bowel. So in this situation, sometimes it's better to cut your losses and just divide the mesenteric lymphadenopathy below this level, preserve the SMA and SMV. Some of these patients have SMB thrombosis, but they'll develop collaterals, and generally they do okay. They can live 5, 10, or 15 years with this situation, and it's surprising that a lot of times these will not progress very quickly. Now, what about laparoscopy? We're doing that for colon cancer now in the majority of patients, but what about for small bowel carcinoids? The pros are that it's minimally invasive, people recover quicker, and you can actually see these lesions. And you can perform the bowel and the node resection. You can also do a cholecystectomy. But the downside is that you're going to miss multifocal disease. If you're using metal graspers to feel the small bowel, you are going to miss a lot of these lesions. So in most cases with laparoscopy, you're going to make an incision to do your anastomosis and retrieve your specimen. And it's harder to do challenging node resections, and I think it's easier to do the cholecystectomy when it's open. So there's some pros and cons, and one compromise is to do a small incision open. This just shows somebody with 9 different lesions with an enlarged lymph node, and we resected this segment of bowel through a small incision. Here's the anastomosis, and here's the incision afterwards. This is about the size of the incision that many people will make with laparoscopy and do an extracorporeal anastomosis. You can actually palpate the small bowel through that kind of incision. And if you are going to do it laparoscopically, just make sure you feel the whole small bowel or else you're going to miss lesions. Now, we also recommend you do cholecystectomy at the time of exploration because a lot of these patients are going to be on somatostatin analogs, and in 2 years or so, they're going to develop gallstones. And about a quarter of those patients will need to have an emergency or semi-urgent cholecystectomy done down the road. If patients have earlier disease and they're not going to be on somatostatin analogs, you might not need to. With patients with liver disease, occasionally they're going to get gallbladder necrosis with hepatic embolization. So in general, our practice is to take out the gallbladder. Now, what about patients with liver metastases? This is a patient that I showed you earlier with the Meckel's diverticulum. This is a solitary liver metastasis. This is a pretty easy decision. Take it out. But a lot of these patients have numerous bilobar metastases and can have quite a bit of volume of liver disease. So the advantage of hepatic cytoreduction is not just to control symptoms, although that is one of the major reasons to do it, is you can really cut down on hormone production. But there seems to be a survival benefit if you can effectively cytoreduce patients. And it used to be thought that you really had to get 90% of the tumor out in order to get a survival benefit, but that's been challenged by recent studies that suggest that even 70% can lead to survival benefits. So it's also appropriate to use parenchymal-sparing procedures. In other words, we don't do a lot of right and left hepatectomies anymore. We'll do a combination of wedge excisions, enucleations, and ablative techniques to take care of like 10, 20, or 30 liver lesions at one time. Patients with less than 10 lesions do better, and patients with less than 25% liver replacement do better. These haven't really been set in stones, but these are general guidelines. So this is that same patient that I just showed you, the liver met. We resected this 5 years earlier, but now he's got three new lesions. And so the thing to understand is that you're not curing these patients. They have a very high recurrence rate after cytoreduction, 94% at 5 years. So that's why doing parenchymal preserving procedures, and the key thing with all patients with small bowel neuroendocrine tumors is to avoid morbidity. These patients are going to live a long time if you do not very much, okay? So if you're going to be aggressive, you have to make sure that they do well. So our overall survival at 5 years in patients in whom three-quarters had liver metastases was about 79%, and at 10 years it was about 57%. So again, these patients, even with advanced disease, can live quite a while. So our recommendations for SBNETs is to remove the primary tumor with the regional lymph nodes, debulk peritoneal disease if present, do cholecystectomy, and then cytoreduce liver metastases if reasonable. If they have a lot of liver replacement, then you might want to forego that and then treat them with embolization or some other therapy. Most of these patients will go on somatostatin analogs, especially if they have liver metastases, but if people have extensive lymph nodes, they will as well. And then we save systemic therapy for patients who then progress after our surgical cytoreduction on somatostatin analogs. And that can involve everolimus, but really the most promising therapy now is the peptide radioreceptor therapy with lutetium-177 labeled somatostatin. So I'm going to stop there, and I thank you very much for your attention.